Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about how physical activity and dietary behavior parallel each other from childhood to adulthood. So what that means is consumption of fruits and vegetables is higher and more frequent in individuals who are physically active when compared to their less active peers. This is a university in Finland. We have a lot more on health and healing. And then today, we're beginning the new year with our first in-depth original investigative report, and it's entitled, Like It or Not, ALEC is Determined You Will Have 5G. What's ALEC? You're going to have a very comprehensive understanding about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and why they are the most powerful lobbying group in the world. Never heard of them? Well, they passed over 7,500 laws from bills that they wrote at the state legislature level. Following that will be a wireless industry confesses no studies of 5G safety. Where did they say that? U.S. Senator Blumenthal raised the question at a Senate hearing. Now, you would have thought that based upon them saying publicly under oath, we have no study showing safety on humans, animals, or the environment, that we would not be allowing them to steamroll 5G, the Internet of all things, but we are. So it's a two-part discussion today. Then from Garth Porter, neocons and the manufacture of the Iran crisis. And then, I didn't get to it yesterday, but Ricky Gervais had a monologue at the Golden Globe Awards that's very telling. I'll share it. You have a chance to share your points of view. And today, we have an investigative journalist coming on the program live to take on Wikipedia's board of directors, board of trustees, and officers, one by one. We know their background. The public does not. We felt that you would find it of interest. What are their qualifications? What allows them to be in such a powerful position to impact people's lives? That is coming at you. But first, a physically active lifestyle and a diet rich in vegetables and fruits have a central role in promoting health by preventing non-communicable diseases. That's a recent study carried out at the Faculty of Sports and Health Sciences at the University in Finland. They examined the association between diverse subgroups of leisure time physical activity and fruit and vegetable consumption from childhood to middle age. And what they found is the more physically active you are, the healthier your diet is. And it just makes sense. Something that we can now encourage people, get into health, start to exercise. Power walking is your best. Biking is important, going to the gym, swimming, jogging, they're all good for you. And then watch your diet improve because the better your body is and the better you feel, the more you're going to want to do for yourself. It's a positive feedback loop. From the University of California at San Francisco comes a study about lifestyle choices could slow familial frontal temporal dementia. Now, what's that mean? This is from the Memory and Aging Center in San Francisco, University of California. It means in lay language that a physically and mentally active lifestyle, meaning you're studying or you're reading, you're using your intellect, you're being creative, you're looking for solutions, it confers resilience to your frontal temporal area of the brain, and that helps slow down or prevent dementia. And research aligns with long-standing findings that exercise and cognitive fitness are one of the best ways to prevent or slow Alzheimer's disease. So this actually shows there's a distinct form of brain degeneration that comes when we are sedentary, when we're taking in inflammatory foods and beverages, like alcohol is very pro-inflammatory. Every single glass of alcohol, no matter how much or what the content is of alcohol percentage, you're destroying neurons, and that leads to neurodegenerative diseases that can disrupt personality, decision-making, language, or even movement abilities. And it typically begins historically in your mid-40s. Now it's in the mid-30s because people are drinking more at an earlier age. And that's just Alzheimer's. There are other conditions that it also contributes to. So clean up your diet, clean up your lifestyle, and you clean up your brain. Can people with anxiety benefit from probiotic foods and supplements? Shanghai Tong University wanted to know. They did a study. And in a review, the team of scientists examined the relationship between the gut and anxiety and found that regulating intestinal bacteria, getting in the good bacteria from good foods, clean foods, good bacteria, and also using probiotics, was a big potential for treating anxiety. So taking care of the gut helps take care of anxiety. And that's been known for a long time. So we have trillions of these microorganisms in our intestines. So regulating intestinal microbiota, or the good bacteria, can be used to treat mental disorders, especially anxiety. And that's what they found. They looked at 21 studies with 1,500 participants, and they found 14 used probiotics, and that made a big difference in those individuals. So for those of you who are anxious, use probiotics as part of your overall wellness program. Also, they found in a separate study how plants improve wound closure in humans. This is from a university in Mexico. In this review, published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, researchers from Mexico summarized evidence of plant extracts and their active compounds accelerating wound healing, speeding it up, getting better tissue repair. And the body responds to skin insult, scratch yourself, cut, bruise, burn, and it's damaged by triggering a complex healing process. And this involves multiple coordinated reactions at both the cellular and molecular level occurring simultaneously. Maybe you're aware of it, maybe not, but I'll share with this. In any case, the healing process can be divided into two parts. One is called cellular migration, and the other is tissue remodeling of the wound. And deep wounds, especially those from surgical procedures, require a multidisciplinary approach for the wound healing process to be successful. And recently, scientific interest in the identification of active compounds derived from ornamental or edible or even wild plants has increased. And these plants are commonly used, by the way, in the skin industry. So according to studies, the active compounds present in natural sources like bee propolis, aloe vera, could induce wound healing and tissue regeneration, thus reducing the time needed to complete wound closure. And plants like common yarrow, Y-A-R-R-O-W, and sage, S-A-G-E, have anti-inflammatory properties and can promote cell proliferation, and this ability contributes to faster tissue rejuvenation. And so it's common all over the world where people have an injury of some kind. They use this, and it works. Also, another study, this is from Current Treatment Options Gastroenterology, correlates with one I did earlier last week about processed foods, and that's the average person's food, is highly correlated with the obesity epidemic in the United States. I mean, just think of what goes into a potato chip, the trans fats, all the heat. You've browned the product that creates acrylamides. Those are cancer-causing. And then you put a preservative in it, so it can last, you know, for 6 months to a year. So all that processed foods, and there are a lot of sugars used in processing too, can cause a increase in weight gain and more adipose tissue. And also, it can induce hepatic steatosis. So go to a healthier, unprocessed diet. Also from Uppsala University in Sweden comes a study about rhodiola. It defeats chronic fatigue in just 1 week. Rhodiola is spelled R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A. By the way, it was used even as far back as the ancient Vikings. And even the Sherpa mountain people relied upon it to help them scale the heights of Mount Everest. Rhodiola rosea, R-O-S-E-A. It's an herb grown in Arctic areas of Asia and Eastern Europe. Very little is known about it in the United States. We don't use it. But recent scientific studies have consistently shown that rhodiola causes significant improvement in fatigue symptoms. I know that everyone that I counsel who has chronic fatigue, Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, or Lyme's disease, I'm making sure they have rhodiola as part of their overall program. And so even if you have prolonged fatigue, meaning lasting 1 to 6 months, or chronic fatigue lasting more than 6 months, it still works. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Complementary Medical or Medicine Research. And it works quickly. And if you want to improve your overall blood lipid profile, University of Eastern Finland founds that camelina, that's C-A-M-E-L-I-N-A oil, reduces overall LDL cholesterol levels in persons with impaired glucose metabolism. And this was published in Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. And in those countries, they use a lot of fatty fish. And that is a low-grade anti-inflammatory, meaning it turns off chronic inflammation. And this camelina oil is rich in alpha-linolenic acid, which is a plant-based omega-3 fatty acid. And it works in turning off inflammation. Just the latest on health and healing. We're 12 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going directly to this opening monologue that I thought you would find of interest, because it puts the conceit, the narcissism, the intellectual vacuity of many of the people in Hollywood and film, music, the whole entertainment industry is out of touch with the real world. And I happen to know that because I have had a direct association with the entertainment world. I remember the day my agent called over at the William Morris Agency in Melbourne, and he said, "Good news. Just sold your book, Black Hollywood, to MGM. I said, "Which MGM?" He said, "Well, there's only one, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And there's something else interesting. Normally, they assign a producer for a project. In this case, the president CEO of the MGM wants to do it himself." I said, "Well, who's he?" I didn't know who he was. "Well, do you remember the Wizard of Oz? His father was the Tin Man." "Oh, okay. All right, so that's an interesting journey. What happened with that?" He was going to make it That's Entertainment Part 3. He had produced Part 1 and Part 2. And that's a whole story to itself. But I had a chance to meet a lot of people in the Hollywood community. Also a friend of mine, very close, long time, lifelong friend, was one of the biggest producers in Hollywood history. So I had a chance to see the reality of how people really live, what they think, what they talk about, how they spend their time, and most importantly, how insecure they are. And so it's not a community I'm that fond of, for a lot of reasons, including those who talk about gun control but then have armed guards and open borders but have walls around their home that you can't get near them, and talk about an environment and fly on private jets and eat Kobe beef. Wow, what hypocrisy. So we're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to have someone who really lays it on the line right to their face, something you never, ever see. But we did. Back in a moment.
The 77th Annual Golden Globe Awards, live from the Beverly Hilton Hotel here in Los Angeles. I'm Ricky Gervais, thank you. You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting these awards, so I don't care anymore. I'm joking, I never did. NBC clearly don't care either, fifth time. So, I mean, Kevin Hart was fired from the Oscars because of some offensive tweets. Hello? Lucky for me, the Hollywood Foreign Press can barely speak English, and they've no idea what Twitter is, so I got offered this gig by fax. So let's go out with a bang. Let's have a laugh at your expense, shall we? Remember, they're just jokes. We're all gonna die soon, and there's no sequel. So, yeah. Remember that. But you all look lovely, all dolled up. You came here in your limos. I came here in a limo tonight, and the license plate was made by Felicity Huffman. So, no. Shush. It's her daughter I feel sorry for, okay? That must be the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to her. And her dad was in Wild Hogs. So, lots of big celebrities here tonight. I mean, legends, icons, yeah? Look, at this table alone, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro. But Baby Yoda. That's Joe Pesci, sorry. I love you, man. Don't have me whacked. But tonight isn't just about the people in front of the camera. In this room are some of the most important TV and film executives in the world, people from every background, but they all have one thing in common. They're all terrified of Ronan Farrow. He's coming for you. He's coming for you. Look, talking of all you perverts, it was a big year. It was a big year for paedophile movies. Surviving R. Kelly, Leaving Neverland, Two Popes. Shut up. Shut up. I don't care. I don't care. Many talented people of colour were snubbed in major categories. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about that. The Hollywood Foreign Press are all very, very racist. So, fifth time. So, we were going to do an in memoriam this year, but when I saw the list of people that had died, it wasn't diverse enough. It just, no. It was mostly white people, and I thought, nah, not on my watch. So maybe next year. Let's see what happens. No one cares about movies anymore. No one goes to the cinema. No one really watches network TV. Everyone's watching Netflix. This show should just be me coming out going, well done, Netflix, you win everything. Good night. But no, we got to drag it out for 3 hours. You could binge watch the entire first season of Afterlife instead of watching this show. That's a show about a man who wants to kill himself because his wife dies of cancer. And it's still more fun than this, okay? Spoiler alert, season two is on the way. So in the end, he obviously didn't kill himself. Just like Jeffrey Epstein. Shut up. I know he's your friend, but I don't care. You had to make your own way here in your own plane, didn't you? Right. But seriously, most films are awful, lazy, remakes, sequels. I've heard a rumour that there might be a sequel to Sophie's Choice. I mean, that'd just be Meryl Streep going, well, it's got to be this one then. Or all the best actors have jumped to Netflix and HBO, you know. And the actors who just do Hollywood movies now do fantasy adventure nonsense. They wear masks and capes and really tight costumes. Their job isn't acting anymore. It's going to the gym twice a day and taking steroids, really. Have we got an award for most ripped junkie? No. No point. We know he'd win that. Martin Scorsese, the greatest living director, made the news for his controversial comments about the Marvel franchise. He said they're not real cinema and they remind him of theme parks. I agree, although I don't know what he's doing hanging around theme parks. He's not big enough to go on the rides, is he? It's tiny. Right. The Irishman was amazing. It was amazing. It was. It was great. Long, but amazing. It wasn't the only epic movie. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, nearly 3 hours long, Leonardo DiCaprio attended the premiere, and by the end, his date was too old for him. So... Even Prince Andrew's like, come on, Leo, mate, you know. You're nearly 50, son. The world got to see James Corden as a fat pussy. He was also in the movie Cats, but no one saw that. And the reviews, oh, shocking. I saw one that said, this is the worst thing to happen to cats since dogs, right? But Dame Judi Dench defended the film, saying it was the role she was born to play, because she... I can't do this next joke. Because she loves nothing better than plonking herself down on the carpet, lifting her leg and licking her... Furball. She's old school. It's the last time, who cares? Oh. Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show. A superb drama, yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. So, if you win, right, come up, accept your little award, thank your agent and your God, and... So... It's already 3 hours long.
Kind of refreshing to hear someone actually tell the truth about an overly blown egoed group of people. Now, we have Helen on the line now. Helen Byniski, B-U-Y-N-I-S-K-I. She is an investigative journalist, and she is going to be on each day for the next couple of weeks, probably, because we've decided it's time to look at who really controls, runs, oversees Wikipedia. We've sent 13 letters, legal letters, showing in great detail that people editing bios from Deepak Chopra to Cheryl Atkinson to myself are all biased. And not only are they biased, they actually brag about their bias on a hidden board, hidden from the public, that we've captured thousands of their statements. Now, we've sent this to them and saying that your own bylaws say that you cannot edit anyone's bio, especially a living person, if they're biased. You must take down that biography immediately. They haven't done it. So since they've been made aware of their complicity in not controlling the edits, especially the skeptics, on complementary and alternative medicine and political issues, then we thought it's time to do an in-depth look. And this is just the first stage of what we're looking at. Welcome to our program, Helen.
Hey there.
Helen, we're only going to do one person at a time, one per day, so it will be relatively short. So share with us what your in-depth investigation has found.
All right. You want me to read the start from the introduction?
Yeah.
Okay. Over 500 million people visit Wikipedia every day on average. The site is reliably at the top of Google search results and has all the trappings of a reliable source. It's an encyclopedia, after all. Like Britannica, it's expected to have accurate, trustworthy, unbiased information. But a real encyclopedia doesn't permit anonymous editors with no scholastic background to edit whenever they please. A real encyclopedia doesn't let editors with an axe to grind destroy the reputations of individuals with whom they have personal or political differences. And a real encyclopedia certainly doesn't serve as a platform for modern-day McCarthyism that plays host to the libel of hundreds, likely thousands, of individuals who have dared to seek the truth outside of medical orthodoxy. Physicians and clinicians who have been ridiculed and had their reputations destroyed with no ability to correct the inaccuracies. Once editors have tagged their victim, there is no escape. No lawsuits, no reasoning will spring the condemned from their solitary confinement at the fringes of mass consciousness. While their attacks continue with impunity, their victims have no way to know who is behind them or why. All this happens with the full blessing of Jimmy Wales, his wife, and a hand-selected board of trustees. This is their story. The difference between what you're about to read and the bios featured on Wikipedia is that these are accurate and well-sourced. In the name of justice for those libeled by this platform, perhaps the most dangerous source of misinformation on the internet, and one that goes unquestioned by the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, and the like in their hunt for quote-unquote fake news, and justice for those patients who might not have been healed if not for the treatments Wikipedia excoriates, we have looked into the people enabling this and call on federal and state authorities, anyone interested in preventing the perversion of the very concept of truth, to do the same. The Wikimedia Foundation, according to its website, wants you to imagine a world in which every single human being can freely share in the sum of all knowledge. But spend a few hours on its flagship product, Wikipedia, and you can see just how loosely that term, knowledge, is defined. Wikipedia seems not to believe in the concept of truth, only verifiability. Anything can be included in its articles so long as it has been written in a reliable source, quote-unquote. And any source can become reliable if enough editors justify the decision to make it so. This nightmarish postmodernism has given rise to one of the preeminent repositories of disinformation on the internet. The foundation, unlike the editors, is largely parasitic. Its employees, whose numbers swell with the excess cash taken in with every fundraising campaign, provide little to no value to the average Wikipedia reader, while its trustees do little more than pad their resumes with the foundation name. Indeed, in our opinion, instead of providing value, they subtract it, whether through absconding with foundation funds to pay for their vacations, or running roughshod over Wikipedia rules to push their pet agenda. Maria Cepedari, Wikipedia alias Raystorm, chair of the Board of Trustees, has long been involved in managing the foundation's money, serving on multiple governance committees before becoming a trustee. She has an impeccable social justice pedigree, having founded Spanish Wikipedia's LGBT Wiki Project and a Spanish language women's editing group. Cepedari came under the microscope recently when her erstwhile wife-slash-girlfriend, Laura Hale, allegedly used her connections to get a longtime Wikipedia administrator, Fram, banned from editing after he corrected her sloppy work one time too many. Fram's ban was handed down by the all-powerful Wikimedia Foundation for nebulous reasons of abuse, but unlike the usual permanent bans the Foundation hands out for unpardonable crimes, it was only temporary. Moreover, the Foundation's trust and safety team had not discussed the matter with the Arbitration Committee, the Editorial Disciplinary Board, at all before unilaterally blocking the editor. Fram did not suffer fools gladly and could be short with editors who repeatedly violated the rules. He had been hauled in front of disciplinary committees more than once over the previous years, but many attempts to bring proceedings against him were declined. When the evidence, quote-unquote, against Fram finally emerged, the over a dozen people who had supposedly complained were found to have done so over a six-year period. Many so-called victims denied having been harassed or hounded at all. Fram's allies at Wikipedia did what the site's editors do well, research, and uncovered a handful of minor altercations with Hale, an editor who never could seem to get the hang of the encyclopedia's rules. Fram had been firm but not cruel with Hale, telling her to stop editing until she could grasp concepts like plagiarism and coherence. And Hale had, some editors suggested, run crying into Cepedari's arms. For months, she ran a banner on her user page, explicitly directed at Fram, telling him to keep away unless he was prepared to interact through a handful of editors of her choice and or the trust and safety team. Hale was an unabashedly terrible editor, copy-pasting an incoherent swath through Paralympic athletes, obscure elements of feminism, abortion, minutiae, and other marginal topics with a social justice pedigree that were likely to endear her to Sepadari and the board. And while some said she had a bit of a history as an internet grifter, trying sexism whenever a community got wise to her machinations, that was a feature, not a bug, for the foundation, which used a poorly written paper she'd written around the time of the Gamergate controversy in 2014 in a list of material its nascent support and safety, soon to become trust and safety, the division which banned Fram, team compiled about online harassment, likely due to the dearth of Wikipedia-specific material. When the foundation wanted to expand its range of bannable offenses to include incivility, it was only natural they'd reach for Hale's complaint, several editors alleged. Even if the Hale story is pure fiction, and Sepadari not only denies it, but protests too much, accusing its authors of bad faith and involvement with the Gamergate movement, how anybody could possibly think a trustee would intervene on behalf of their spouse, Sepadari's hands aren't exactly clean. When first appointed as a trustee, Sepadari helped change the voting rules for the selection of two trustee positions so that Wikipedia user groups gained the voting rights that had previously been limited only to chapters. This move benefited Hale, who had started two user groups and was thus able to vote on behalf of one in the Foundation's 2019 board election. Researchers on Wikipedia criticism board Wikipediocracy turned up several more conflicts of interest involving Hale and Sepadari, many of which involved the latter steering Foundation grants the former's way. With Sepadari's help, less than a year after joining her paramour in Madrid in 2013, Hale was able to first convince the Spanish Paralympic Committee into sponsoring her as a Wikipedia in residence, a sort of official editor for nonprofits, despite not speaking Spanish, and then managed to use that title to convince the Wikipedia Foundation to pay her way to a Paralympic alpine skiing event, bringing Sepadari as a guest for a total of 1,035 euros. Hale had been milking the foundation for a while, along with her previous roommate slash mate, Australian editor Ross Mallett, username Hawkeye7. She had milked $11,000 out of them to attend the London 2012 Paralympics. She had also get the foundation to pay for trips to Argentina, London, Amsterdam, Slovakia, and Berlin. Sepadari's Wikimedia Foundation bio is rather bold about these extracurricular activities and her casual use of foundation cash, hinting that she, quote, travels around the world, quote, in her spare time, though neglecting to mention that travel is often done on the foundation's dime. Nor does the foundation get its money's worth out of these junkets, since Wikipedia is based on secondary sources alone, and Wiki News readers are vanishingly sparse. Worse, Hale may have taken cash from the Australian Center for Paralympic Studies to mass create the thousands of poorly written articles that set Fram and other editors' teeth on edge. She even rewarded her wife for entree into the upper echelons of the foundation by writing a lengthy and rather ridiculous article on, quote, lesbians during the socialist government of José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, prominently featuring Sepadari, with photo, as, quote, one of the major writers of the English Wikipedia article on same-sex marriage in Spain, updating the article often in 2007, unquote. Nothing says notable like editing a Wikipedia article, especially often. Digging deeper into Sepadari's background, editor Vigilant at Wikipediocracy claimed he was almost certain, quote-unquote, that Sepadari's academic credentials were, quote, completely fabricated, unquote. There is no evidence she has worked as a professor aside from teaching a, quote, vanity class or two at the university where she claims to have be working on her PhD. But for all the couple's transgressions, quote, increased activity in covering disability-related issues and sensitivity in making Wikipedia more disability-friendly, along with increased activity in the LGBT and feminism subject areas, was considered more important than following the rules. It may seem unfair to scrutinize Sepadari's life in this manner. However, she is the chair of the foundation's board of trustees, and as such must be aware of conflicts of interest, lest she bring the entire organization into violation of the regulations governing charities, either in the U.S. or elsewhere. According to California state law governing nonprofits, and the foundation is headquartered in California, even though Sepadari and Hale live in Spain, quote, a staff member who is affiliated with a prospective vendor, consultant, or grantee shall abstain from participating in any decision involving that vendor, consultant, or grantee, and specifies that in a 501c3 nonprofit like Wikimedia, no part of the net earnings of a foundation inures to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual. Regulations also bar, quote, excess benefit transactions, in which a charity provides excessive economic benefits to a, quote, disqualified person, a term that includes spouses and relatives of board members. Board members are also required to divulge conflicts of interest on at least an annual basis. For all Sepadari's defense of Hale in Wikipedia's talk pages, she never makes reference to the pair's romantic relationship, except to deny it amid the Fram controversy. Sepadari's actions don't just cast the rest of the organization into disrepute. They could jeopardize the foundation's tax-exempt status. Because Wikipedia's editors are almost exclusively white males from the global north, the foundation is desperate for diversity, and it will set its vaunted principles on fire to get it. Whether it's embracing Sephardari and Hale or putting out a call on its website for non-white editors to, quote, help correct history, the foundation wears its desperation on its sleeve. And that's it for Sephardari.
Okay. What does that, to the overview of the audience who are not familiar with any of these people, what does that tell you? What is your personal opinion from what you've researched and discovered about probably the most powerful person on the board of trustees of Wikipedia?
Yeah, I mean,
or Wikimedia.
It's definitely, I mean, people don't look into these people because they're kind of behind the scenes, but these are the ones who basically hold the purse strings, direct the organization. Basically, they're the ones guiding it in the direction that it is going, and that direction, spoiler alert, wants to control a lot more of the internet than it already does.
But these people also have power to control the type of research and editing that is done by the skeptics, do they not?
Yep. They can intervene if there's a problem with a large-scale problem like the entire scientific and medical part of the encyclopedia being skewed in favor of a certain group. Yes, they can intervene.
So it's no secret now that hundreds of thousands of clinicians and hundreds of millions of patients using complementary and alternative medicine are all under attack without any justification or any true scientific basis on Wikipedia. Is that not correct?
Yep.
And this has been brought to their attention on more than a dozen occasions with specific examples, and yet not a single thing that we're aware of has been done to stop it. Is that correct?
Yes, and more than that, the people who try to bring this to their attention have been mocked and belittled.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much, Helen. We look forward to the next person. Everybody, including all their, by the way, all the lawyers who have worked in the past or currently working for Wikipedia are also going to be examined in depth. We're going to look into everyone's background associated, and the next time, Jimmy Wales' wife. Let's see how that sits with them when suddenly they are the focus of an unbiased investigative report, unlike their edited reports on everyone that they dislike. Thank you. And that was investigative journalist Helen Beninsky. Now to a special in-depth original investigative report, the first of the new year. Like it or not, Alec is determined you will have 5G, Richard Gale and myself. For the average American, bills that are introduced into state legislatures, especially those with bipartisan support, generally become the law of the state. But how often does the average citizen of any state review the bills or laws in different committees or the laws passed and signed by the governors that have a direct impact upon their lives? We would imagine very few. What does it mean when a bill in California, for example, that mandates a change in an existing environmental law that protects citizens and in turn permits and protects corporations to pollute the environment, water, and air with impunity? Then that same bill shows up in other states across the nation. How does that happen? One past example are bills to ban GMO labeling that were virtually the same in California, Oregon, Colorado, and elsewhere. The same is true for hydrofracking and pipeline installations, rollbacks on environmental protections, public funds for charter schools, increasing the private prison system, gun rights, keeping drug costs very high, etc. These are only a few examples of thousands of laws that are in place because one trade organization that represents many of the world's largest and most powerful corporations and industries has fully captured the policy narrative in many of our state legislatures. Today, many of us in the environmental movement consider the greatest danger to human health and the environment is going to be the full rollout of 5G technology. This is an article exposing one of the largest organizations in America that is paving the way to make 5G a reality, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. The name Alex should be a household word synonymous with corporate interest over the welfare of the public. The organization was created out of a gathering of radicalized conservative activists in Chicago in 1973. Having dreamt for a Barry Goldwater savior, conservatives got Nixon instead. The group was founded by Paul Weyrich, who had just founded the Heritage Foundation, and Lou Barnett, who helped Ronald Reagan's 1968 failed campaign for the presidency. Nevertheless, Reagan's legacy continues to impact the organization. Its structure of so-called task forces to bring elected politicians together with the leaders of private industry to draft policies for a large variety of issues, including medicine, telecommunications, regulatory policy, education, civil and criminal justice, commerce, homeland security, taxation laws, and energy and agriculture. This was all modeled after Reagan's National Task Force on Federalism. Greenpeace's Connor Gibson has described ALEC as, quote, a one-stop shopping outlet for large companies seeking state legislators to move their agenda through state houses coast to coast. And it's a pay-to-play service for corporations. After a whistleblower inside ALEC provided all of Alex's model bills drafted in private meetings between state legislators and corporate lobbyists to the Center for Media and Democracy, we now know how and why ALEC has been so covertly successful for these past at least two decades. Although the name ALEC and the Koch brothers are frequently sounded in the same breath, Koch Industries did not join the council until 1993. Since then, the Kochs virtually hijacked the organization, in addition to becoming its largest and most important funder. In tough times, the Kochs have been the first bailout of the council. Over the years, the Kochs and their network of companies, foundations, and organizations such as Americans for Prosperity and Stand Together have come to dominate the council and steer its ideological aims. Charles Koch and Alex's underlying philosophy about national and state governance is that the heads of private industry are always far more qualified to lead the country than career politicians. Consequently, the council's legislative infrastructure is based upon leaders of large mega corporations colluding with elected officials at the state level to advise and construct policies in secret, which are termed, quote, model legislation, before state senates and houses. The greater public good, represented by the leaders of civil society, are completely absent from the conversation. No, the only voices you will hear are the titans of industry. They run the show. Benefits to private corporate interest, revenues, and stock prices are all that matters. This is Alex's definition of economic progress. It is neoliberal capitalism on steroids. ALEC claims that its membership is comprised of nearly one-third of the country's state legislators and stakeholders from across the policy spectrum. About 80% of these are members of the GOP. There are also 270 industry and trade associations, conservative foundations, and many of the nation's largest mega corporations represented. Therefore, ALEC events and networks have become a paradise for large corporations to gain direct access to your state legislator. PR Watch reveals that, quote, even though many states prohibit corporations and lobbyists from influencing legislators through gifts and favors, ALEC has provided a way for special interests to sidestep these laws, end quote. It has done so skillfully and unhampered for several decades. According to the Capital Research Center, a right-wing think tank that functions as a quasi-fusion center to gather information on unions, environmental and liberal activist organizations for ALEC and the Heritage Foundation, about 1,500, that's 1,500 bills based upon ALEC's model legislation are introduced to state legislative bodies every year. And worse, 20% of them become law. Now, we are therefore looking at 7,500 laws minimally, that were incubated in Alex's secret gatherings with your state legislators. And according to a Brookings Institute investigation, about 90% of these bills are introduced in state legislators by Republicans. According to Brookings' report, Alex's influence over lawmaking in state legislators, quote, "What Alex does during his closed-door meetings is largely a mystery. Not only are their meetings private, but so too are their legislative successes and failures. Specifically, we do not know where Alex's model bills inspired the introduction and passage of new legislation. Therefore, it is no surprise to find Alex's fingerprints all over the aggressive push to roll out 5G technology across the nation." One of the more frequent fears of the 5G rollout is that small cell antenna systems will be installed throughout cities and towns in heavily populated areas. It's happening now. Instead of soaring cell towers that you can drive through the country and see these gigantic towers up in the air, well, that's different. What we're seeing now will be millions and millions of microwave antennas which adorn power poles, street lights, rooftops. They could be on every block. Although these are publicly owned installations, the city councils and the public have no say-so in the matter. Private industry has been given carte blanche control over collating and then allocating these devices as it chooses. In other words, it can put it anywhere it wants. Alec Member at CTIA, a national trade group representing the 5G corporate giants, quote, "It sounds super sexy and we hope that it is." Yeah. For the rest of us, there will be no means to avoid these cells' microwave pulses day or night. Yet it was Alec back in early 2016 who drafted legislation to, quote, streamline this infrastructure in violation of zoning laws. Last year, Comcast became the latest large corporation to drop its ALEC membership after the Securities and Exchange Commission demanded the company reveal its lobbying figures and follow shareholder complaints about the company's excessive secret lobbying activities, including opposing to state internet neutrality laws. In fact, there's been a large exodus of mega companies leaving the ALEC family. Since 2011, our research has shown that the Center for Media and Democracy initiated its campaign to pressure corporations to leave ALEC. Comcast is the 116th firm to have done so. Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Merck, Wells Fargo, Pepsi and Coca-Cola, Shell, British Petroleum, Exxon, Visa, Sprint, and T-Mobile. Telecom giants like AT&T, Cox Communications, and Verizon quit ALEC after a human rights campaign was launched against the council for David Horowitz's racist keynote hate speech against women, blacks, and Muslims at ALEC's annual convention in New Orleans. Horowitz is a right-wing ideologue and the CEO of David Horowitz Freedom Center that has been identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a, quote, driving force of the anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, anti-black movements, end quote. Trump's white supremacist advisor, Stephen Miller, who has been accused of advising Trump to separate my immigrant children from their families, is a Horowitz protege. Nevertheless, some of the most powerful telecommunications trade associations have retained membership. CTIA, that's the Wireless Association, Charter Communications, the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, and the Satellite Broadcasting and Communications Association. The departure of the large telecom companies that I just mentioned may be more of a ruse than a reflection of corporate conscience. They are still well represented in ALEC by the industry associations. AT&T, CellPoint, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon are all members of the Wireless Association, and it's still a part of ALEC. And the NCTA, the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, two of the largest associations promoting the Internet of Things, 5G, that are publicly lobbying for ALEC telecommunications, quote, model legislation. And they continue to send lobbyists representing their commercial and policy interests to ALEC meetings through other channels. The Wireless Infrastructure Association, in collaboration with ALEC, has been developing model state legislation already adopted by several states, including California, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, Tennessee, New Jersey, and Michigan. In Hawaii, the Wireless Infrastructure Association was managed by individuals who were able to amend the state land use regulations to permit wireless facilities installations on agricultural land in complete denial of electromagnetic frequencies' adverse impacts upon bees, other insects, animal life, and the environment. In Nevada, installation will proceed regardless of a municipality's consideration of radio frequencies' health impacts. In Florida, local jurisdictions are limited to make demands for information from the telecom industry's installations that may pose undisclosed risks. In short, ALEC is busily clearing the field for rapid 5G installation by removing state and local regulatory barriers that may create bottlenecks for development. Despite ALEC's woes and setbacks, the arrival of Trump in the White House has made up for its loss of corporate membership. No other administration since the Council's founding has been so packed with ALEC representatives, estimated at one half of all of President Trump's cabinet appointees. ALEC's 45th year celebration was held at Trump's International Hotel in D.C., a mile from the White House. ALEC's CEO, Lisa Nelson, expressed her elation that the administration, quote, does have the potential to be an ALEC administration. It is full of the people and ideas we've advanced since 1973. Now is our time. Who else have we heard that from? Now is our time, your time, Hillary's time. And ALEC is ready. It was through ALEC channels that Brett Kavanaugh reached the Supreme Court bench. Trump's former EPA head, Scott Pruitt, was earlier the chair of an ALEC task force. And Mike Pence was a loyal lobbyist for ALEC policies as Indiana's governor and continues to be so as vice president. Nikki Haley, Rick Perry, Betsy DeVos, Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Labor Secretary Alex Acosta, and the head of Health and Human Services, Alec Azar, are all ALEC alumni or insiders. Trump's chairman of the FCC, which is responsible for federal funding the 5G rollout, a man named Ajit Pai, is a former Verizon attorney and a longtime ALEC associate. Back in 2013, Pai spoke before ALEC Communications Technology Task Force to commend state efforts to roll back regulations in order to permit the Internet Protocol transition, Washington's term for the Internet technology revolution, to unfold freely without those pesky obstacles from state and city governments. A wolf in sheep's wool. Pai is a committed free market globalist who favors solutions coming from the market competition in the absence of government regulations. Therefore, it came as no surprise that Pai appointed ALEC Director of Telecommunications Task Force Jonathan Hassenchild to the FCC's new Broadband Development Advisory Council last April. Reporting for Tech Dirt, Carl Bode noted that ALEC has already helped, quote, the broadband industry pass blatantly protectionist bills in more than 21 states that hamstring or simply ban towns or cities from building their own networks, even in areas when private industry refused to, end quote. Despite ALEC's libertarian rhetoric of favoring net neutrality, Hassenchild has lobbied heavily in opposition to net neutrality protections, which is ALEC's real goal. FCC Commissioner Brendan Barr has traveled the country touting ALEC's, quote, model legislation for 5G. Before Indiana Senate, Barr promised that, quote, 5G will create jobs, improve education, and promote safety. But to upgrade our networks, we must upgrade our regulations, end quote. The Trump definition for upgrade means trash it, eliminate it, bury it. In its resolution opposing state and local mandates requiring warning labels on wireless devices and packaging, ALEC acknowledges the FCC safety limits for public exposure to electromagnetic frequency radiation devices at 1.6 watts per kilogram body weight. despite acknowledging the health risks, quote, based upon the weight of scientific research, end quote, it still, quote, opposes all state and local legislation and regulations that would require either health-related warning label, including but not limited to specific absorption rate levels on wireless devices and packaging. As with its denial of anthropogenic climate change, a direct indictment against many of its most prominent corporate members in the fossil fuel industry, ALEC only cites cherry-picked studies, largely outdated and some over a decade old, that negate any evidence of electromagnetic frequencies' adverse effects. But on this program, and in three separate articles, Richard Gale and I have shown 10,000-plus scientifically reviewed studies confirming electromagnetic frequencies' relationship with cancer, Alzheimer's, endocrinal dysfunction, and that is being denied. So what we have in conclusion is we have Alex's 5G platform represents just one body of bills that reveal its mission to shape the nation into the image of a corporation. The same is true for other areas where the council pushes aside the public's demand for democratic voice in favor of private industry interest. Despite the large telecommunication industries companies leaving ALEC, it remains the best ally in state legislatures. And clearly, after 3 years of Trump in the White House and the administration's downsizing the federal government and shredding regulatory protections, Alex's dream of running the government is becoming true. This is posted on PRN.fm. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.